I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer. Come along and join me for a conversation about the newly released movie, This Tempting Madness, with Jennifer Montgomery, director, writer, producer, and Andrew Davis, producer, writer, and cinematographer. This Tempting Madness was inspired by a true story. Mia awakens from a coma, her memory fractured, and the man she loves missing. As she puts the pieces of her past together, she starts to question her own actions and her perception of reality. Come along and join Jennifer and Andrew to discover the rest of the fascinating story of how this film came to be.
I'm Andrew Davis, and I'm the writer, co-writer, producer, and cinematographer on This Tempting Madness.
I'm Jennifer Montgomery, and I am the director of This Tempting Madness and also the co-writer.
Oh, cool. So how did Tempting Madness happen?
Well, that is a wild story. I'm going to let Jennifer start because it started with a very intense, true story that happened to her best friend.
So This Tempting Madness is inspired by a very challenging event that my best friend went through, and it is the exploration of how you arise from that and come back from tragedy, and but beyond that, it's also just a very intense, thrilling ride of a movie, because it is like the wildest psychological thriller where you're really dealing with sort of mind-bending memory issues and how to trust yourself.
I guess the quick pitch version of it is just so everybody has a sense of the film who hasn't seen it. It's an intense psychological thriller, like Jennifer said, but it is inspired by this true story about a woman who wakes up from a coma and her memory is blank. She's grievously injured. Her husband is missing, and she's trying to piece together her life and how she got to this circumstance. But as she starts to do this with her family and the people around her, she begins to question whether she can trust herself and her memories. All of this, like Jennifer was saying, is something that started with something we live through.
Real life.
Very much so. Yeah, so she, at the very beginning of the film, you'll see her experience traumatic brain injury and a fall from a fall. And she is in a coma. And as she wakes up from the coma, it takes her a while to recover her ability to regain short-term memory. So I would talk to her for an hour every morning, and she could only keep a conversation going on a 60-second loop. So we would end up having the same conversation over and over again on about a minute-long loop for an hour. And then I'd call her again in the evening, speak to her for an hour, and it would be the same thing. Wow. And it was just this terrifying fear that she may never get more than 60 seconds of life back. Eventually, she was able to build her strength and her mind back so that she could do 5-minute loops and then 10-minute loops. And it took several months, but eventually she was able to regain enough strength and memory to fully understand what had happened and then move forward. And now she's thriving. And
what was the process of recovery?
She was having trouble with her memory, so we encouraged her to keep a journal so that she could start tracking things and start piecing things together. Like, if you guys have ever seen Memento, it's, you know, a similar concept of just trying to understand and remember your life and what led to this. So at first she was like hesitant to keep a journal, and then she was like, why should I keep a journal? I don't need to. It's okay. And, you know, we're filmmakers. And so she had said to me, she was like, oh, well, do you want to make a movie about it? And we were like, sure. Yeah, if that's what you need to do the journal, then yeah. Having no intention to make a movie. And then when she got to this point, when she was feeling better and feeling stronger and recovered, you know, we were all sort of in this better place. We thought that was the end. And then she came to us and she was like, well, but Are you going to make a movie about it?
And I guess to answer your question more about the healing process as well, I think, you know, so much of it, like Jennifer was saying, was about just conversation and this long ongoing dialogue, especially that Jennifer would have with her, you know, every day. And it was really tough because, you know, when you're interacting with someone who has a very fragmented memory, it can be tempting to implant your own memories of their life into theirs, right, and supplant their own memories. But we really tried hard, and Jennifer did an amazing job threading that needle, which is very, very fine. And it really was just such a long process, and it was just such a diligent and, you know, conversations over and over and over again. And so then, you know, like Jennifer's saying, ultimately those conversations are what led to this decision point to make the film.
Fascinating, because you're talking about an inner dialogue, mm-hmm. you know, inside of a brain. And then you guys are having to transmute that mm-hmm. into an exterior, mm-hmm. external visual journey.
That's the great challenge, right? And also just to be true to her story and try to help just bring her experience to the forefront. Mm-hmm. And in doing that, is important to us to just keep her active in the project, to keep her along the journey and checking in and making sure she was comfortable with all the things all throughout, and really just trying to make sure that she had a voice in it, but also that we had objectivity as artists.
Talk to us about the magic and the complexity of doing a visual journey, but then a verbal story too, with her and with narrator.
It's an internal film in terms of, you know, talking about memory and thinking, and then as a filmmaker, it's a visual medium, and you really have to work to sort of create this immersive experience that brings the audience into her mind. And so we're trying to use all the senses we have for that. And of course, one of them is visual.
Yeah, give us a visual metaphor for some of the techniques that you employed.
I think the biggest visual metaphor in the film is that we wanted her to be like a phoenix rising from the ashes. And we wanted to show that arc. And we wanted to show also these cycles of violence and the cycles of mental challenges. And so I would say visually, phoenixes, cycles, circles, we use the Ouroboros a lot.
Yeah, the film is constructed intentionally elliptically, and very much it begins with a fall and ends with a rise. And so, you know, which is very much important to us about her journey, but also what we wanted the audience to be able to take away from the film, that, you know, in so much of our lives can be defined by the things that take us down, but really it's what we, when we choose to stand up and to rise from. And so I think that was so important to us, as specifically a visual metaphor, to take the internal experience she was having and externalize it in a film context.
Two extremes as a filmmaker, that inner and outer.
That's right, yeah. And then we really tried to use the soundscape to pull out mm-hmm. her inner dialogue as well. One of the things that we did with the sound design is we really worked hard to make the sound design and the music blend together seamlessly. And in creating the score for it, we really wanted it to bring her character to life more. And the actress in the film is Simone Ashley from Bridgerton, and she's a classically trained singer, and she has perfect pitch. Wow. And so what we did is we recorded her singing two octaves, both tones and notes, but also humming and whispering in each note level. And then our composer created this voice organ, and she used Simone's actual voice to be the notes of the score. So the score you hear of the film is really Simone's voice as an instrument. And we did that to sort of bring her inner dialogue out more in the feelings of the movie. And then beyond that, I mean, we've talked about the arc of the movie, but we worked hard to create twists and turns, because the reality of being on this journey is we didn't know where we'd end up. Yeah. We didn't know how much recovery would happen. She didn't know how much recovery would happen. And beyond that, you know, she's struggling with, how did I get here and what do I do next? The twists and turns that come along with that, I mean, the amount of times we would look at each other just in the process of her healing and be like, oh no, now what? We're boundless.
Really powerful. Really profound. The music, a little bit more about that.
As Jennifer was saying, The music is very much unique in its design, that we very much wanted the sound design and the music to work hand in hand. And so often there's a point where you can't tell where one ends and the other begins. And so the score, the entire construction of the film was very rigorously constructed to put the audience inside this fractured mind. And so every choice, at a visual or auditory level, was done in the pursuance of that goal. And the score, as Jennifer is talking about, is the foundation of it is Simone's voice. And then we also have this incredible cellist, Julia Kent, who I think is like the sort of emotional core of the music. So whereas Simone is like the surreal, the personal core of it, the cello is kind of the counterpoint to that in many ways. And so, yeah, it was a really beautiful synthesis, and Rebecca Carriard, our composer, did an incredible job. But, you know, so much of that is the way that it plays with the sound design as well, too, which is something that Jennifer specifically just spent an incredible amount of time with our whole team designing, that very immersive experience.
Any real epiphanous moments for you in that whole process?
I mean, every moment along the way is like, this has been such an intense experience, because we lived through it with my friend before this happened. And then the process of doing this, we're reliving it and reliving it over and over again. And then seeing just how it affects people, and seeing how people process it as they're exposed to it, both people that are totally unfamiliar with the story and people that are very close to the story. And I mean, sometimes it, you know, making an independent film can be such a challenging journey, and it is just wild to see people respond and feel like there was a purpose to all of the mayhem.
Was there any profound moments for the protagonist, you know, for her in that journey? She was involved with you, right?
She was, yeah. When you say a profound experience, I think it's a compilation of so many tiny things adding up to be one profound experience. Right. Like, she watched the film. I was so nervous for the first time for her to watch the film, and she loved it. And she's watched it countless times since then. I don't even know how many times, but many, many, many times she loves watching it. And that's...
There's a therapeutic
process. I think so. Exactly.
Yeah, very much so.
Think about how rare that is. You know, there's no movies about you.
Exactly, right? Exactly. Which I'm grateful for. But but I think for her, so much of it is the strange process of still not actually being able to remember much of what happened, because her mind, as a protection mechanism, still very much early on, but still to this day, has blocked out a lot of the negative things that happened. And, you know, a lot of the film is her trying to kind of deal with overcoming not being able to remember that. So her seeing the film in many ways is like kind of just sort of touching at something that she's still is a little bit out of reach, you know, inside her mind.
How profound. I mean, I can't imagine watching a movie about you and your journey. Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, it's something I think, like, you know, we mentioned at the beginning of our conversation, we never set out to make this as a movie. Like, we just lived it, and it was sort of forced upon us. And frankly, it was like something we were almost drug into in many ways. Like, there was a point where we just felt like kind of have to make this, because this is a story, a conversation that needs to be had. And it was in that moment that we were obliged to decide, well, what kind of movie is it going to be? Because there are many films or many stories that are based or inspired by actual events, but, you know, some are handled in a more documentary way, some are, you know, in a more kind of literal, linear fashion that is as faithful as possible. But for us, because it was such a surreal and, I think, internal experience for, you know, me, our protagonist of the film, but also for us, we wanted to create something that kind of translated that experience into something that was more immersive from an audience, to actually put her, or put people in her shoes. Whereas if it's like a documentary, sometimes can be distancing because you're watching somebody, as opposed to
the lens is far away.
Exactly. So our goal was to literally put the lens as close as possible to her. And there were times where I literally, with the camera lens, was 6 inches from Simone's face, and she still is delivering, which is incredible. And so, yeah, so I think as the film, it is a really intense but immersive journey inside her mind. And I think that's that's what was so gratifying, I think, about the process.
Yeah, and it allows us to deal with some really difficult subject matters that people don't talk about very often because they're tough conversations that people like to keep behind closed doors. And this has been a great avenue to just sort of crack open conversation, to allow people to think about these things in a totally new way, to explore them.
Friend of mine, she was trauma rehab at UW in Washington.
Oh.
Yeah, and it just resonates in my mind thinking about it. Mm. A therapeutic modality to harness to. How's that going? Connecting with, showcasing for people going through this.
It's surprising and exciting every day to hear from people that resonate with the project when they see it, because they've gone through similar experiences. I think it's wild to realize just how many people have a story like this. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's something really freeing in seeing a film and realizing you're not alone with this. And whether it's you that has this experience or a friend that's had this experience, there are so many people out there that are going through similar experiences that are just afraid to talk about it or don't feel seen and don't feel heard. And this is an awesome opportunity to just look at it in a new light.
Yeah. And how about different places to show it, you know, that would bounce back, say Stanford University or Harvard? Or what are you doing as far as distribution and sharing?
Well, we would love to engage with those kinds of venues more. We're starting to try to make inroads there, but, you know, we're open to any opportunities for sure. We have distribution. We're going to be in a small theatrical distribution June 12th, and then we'll be available day and date on demand if you want to do a pay-per-view on Apple or Amazon. But cool. I recommend seeing it in theaters because the sound will really get you when you hear it around, like it sticks with you, for sure. I mean, and the visuals, too, of course.
But. So, here now, somebody wanted to harness, where would they go online?
As of now, just for information, you can go to our website, thistemptingmadness.com, you know, or find us at thistemptingmadness on Instagram.
Trailer?
The trailer is not
dropped it yet.
Not been dropped, but it is coming very soon. And so, yeah, we've been really privileged to be able to screen it at a variety of festivals, and you know, the latest experience has been great here in San Luis, and just been such a warm and positive community of artists who, you know, have received the film. And
So is this your debut?
We actually debuted the film at the International Film Festival of India, which is the oldest film festival in South Asia. It's a very cool festival. It's very prestigious. It was such an honor to be invited there. One of the stars of our film is also Suraj Sharma, who was the star of Life of Pi, which premiered at the International Film Festival of India in Goa world premiere. Yeah. So it was fun because it was like a full circle moment for him, Pi all grown up, and it was such an awesome experience to be able to show it to other audiences around the world and see how they reacted. And there's always a fear when you're going and doing something like that as a filmmaker. You don't know how different audiences will respond, and we were just so blessed to have a wonderful, warm reception. It was incredible.
So where do we go from here?
Well, as Jennifer mentioned, the film is going to be available widely in June on the 12th. And so
streaming.
Simultaneously, it'll be in a select number of theaters around the country. And then it will also be available for rental and purchase on video on demand, Apple, Amazon. And then after that, it will end up being licensed and out on streamings. But it's very exciting.
No kidding. And how about upcoming film festivals?
I think we may have one more screening, one more festival in Washington, D.C., just before our release in June. SLO is, I think, our last West Coast film festival, and it's really been a privilege and an honor to be here.
That's so cool. To learn more,
please find us at thistemptingmadness.com. You can find more information about upcoming screenings and the trailer when it's available, which is coming soon, very soon. And also on Instagram, This Tempting Madness.
Does Instagram work best for you guys?
Yeah, that's where the most up-to-date information and engagement, if you want to reach out to us. There's also an email on the website, that you can contact us with. Instagram, thistemptingmadness.com, and just keep an eye out because we're going to be dropping the trailer and the poster very soon.
My name is Jennifer Montgomery, director of This Tempting Madness.
And my name is Andrew Davis, co-writer, producer, cinematographer of This Tempting Madness. And also, we're creative partners, but we are actually also married as well, too. Oh, cool. So, and we just celebrated a wedding anniversary up here in SLO. So,
congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah.
Very cool. A double duty.
A double that's duty, right, yes. And right. Someone, you know, it was a very intense experience, and for some, it would have maybe pulled them apart, but for us, it brought us together more, and the experience of making the film and being on this journey together has really just been so special for us as a couple.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, iTunes, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
This is Roseanne Cash, and I'm sitting here with Tom Wilmer. Please support your local NPR station. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. If I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.